tell us how you lost the leg.
Okay. My mom and dad growing up used to have like people stay with us, you know, from the streets and, you know, from, you know, like out of prison and stuff, and just try to help people out. Anyways, it was 1989, around like September, October-ish, they had this one guy come and move in from California. He was affiliated with this biker gang, and my dad used to work for this auto shop. They accused him of something that he did or did not do, whatever. And then basically he got fired. He left the job, and this guy was friends with them, who was referred to my family through other members of my family. And as a good person, right? So we'll open the door for him. He goes in a store. I remember him buying candy with my dad. They came out and gave us all candy. And when he gave me mine, he was like, "Here, Matt, here's this one's extra sweet." And I ate it. I got sick. I lost my leg. I had a blood clot. Had a high fever. Was hallucinating. Seeing things, you know, I was talking to people that weren't there. My mom and dad were freaking out. And paramedics came, pumped my stomach. I still was hallucinating, so they brought me out of the house. And I remember them carrying me. I remember them taking me to the hospital. Last thing I remember was having a thermometer put up my ass, and that's pretty much it, bro. You know, I woke up with my leg gone. That's what happened with my leg.
Oh my god.
So this guy, and I've said this story over 1,000 times, and it still like gives me the shakes about it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what happened.
So he poisoned you?
Yep, he poisoned me because I was, I guess the only thing we could think of is because my dad worked with me a lot.
Oh my god.
My dad didn't have favorites, but my dad spent a lot of time with me. I was always the most like my dad, so we got along really good.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that's the reason that he chose me over the other kids.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh my god, that's awful. That's awful.
Yeah, so that's what happened with me. I'm just glad that it happened when I was young and not when I was just older and I was adapted and like I don't know any other way, so it's normal to me.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I see pictures of me with two legs and I'm like, who's that kid? Know that kid. You know? That's how I feel.
Oh my goodness.
Because I think that made me a different person, you know?
Yeah.
I think it changed me.
Yeah.
Like lots of ways, like I'm still learning to this day, you know, of like why that happened, and it happened for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, who knows? Maybe I would have been a scumbag if I had two legs, you know? Maybe that taught me something that I wouldn't have learned with two legs, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe there's a lesson to be learned, and I believe
it. So this is pretty spiritual. Like, you in your heart of hearts, you believe that happened for a reason. Like,
yes, without a doubt.
This is part of, like, a divine plan. This is a spiritual,
without a doubt. I also wonder if I would even be fighting if I had two legs.
Really?
For one, my financial would be different, you know. Not gonna get into personal details, but certain things were set up for me because of the loss of my leg, which okay. I don't have to work a normal job like everybody else. I mean, I do have things that I make money with, but like,
well, fine. I'm sure you're sponsors.
Yeah, well, that's not making money.
That's tough, yeah.
However, so I'm able to financially support my family because of the loss of my leg, and I'm able to go after my goals and be happier in life because of the loss of my leg. I'm able to dedicate my whole life to something I'm passionate about, like mixed martial arts or grappling, something that doesn't make a lot of money. Which I wouldn't be. If I was in my current situation right now, I would have bills to pay, you know, with two legs, and I wouldn't have...
You'd be on a whole different grind. You'd be on a whole different hustle.
My whole path would have been completely different. So who knows? Maybe there's something I would have done that was really bad, or something that I wouldn't have done that's really good.
Okay. Okay.
Either path, you know? Okay. So that's how I have to look at it, and that's what I truly believe is the truth, you know?
Okay. Okay. You ever have trouble getting opponents?
Oh, yes. It's a daily fight.
Tell me about that.
Well, I don't have trouble. My manager has trouble.
Your opponents are having trouble. I can get my ass beat by...
Actually, the universe has changed for me in the last 3 years, but yeah. I'm not going to ever say it's easy to find fighters to fight me, but it's getting easier. I'm making more gain than I ever have. I'm proving my purpose in mixed martial arts and that I belong. I've proved that time, and I keep proving that. And so as I continue to do this and as I continue to go on my journey, more people's eyes are going to be open. Like, hey, Matt Bessel isn't a lose-lose situation fighter.
Is that what people say?
Matt Bessel is a champion. Matt Bessel is a beast, bro. And I hate to talk about myself in third person, but I'm putting myself in how everybody else is thinking, you know?
Yeah.
So the more I do this, the more I keep going and pushing from breaking down these barriers, the more people are going to want to fight me. And gonna wanna, you know, get in there and try their style with a style that they've never fought before. Isn't that what martial arts is all about? Right. Fighting one style versus another style? Well, there's no style in the world that's like my style. So if you really want to challenge yourself and you're a flyweight, get in there with my style.
So you're still active. You're still fighting.
Oh yeah, I'm never gonna quit, man. And even when I quit, I'm gonna make champions. If I don't get there, I'm getting someone there. That's what.
And I asked around, and it was either judo, like specifically learning how to do throws, or jiu-jitsu. And I went and found a gym, and tried out the 3 days, and I was like, this is for me. And then I just went crazy.
Yeah. You did go a little crazy, didn't you? You were doing, what did you say, like 10 times a week?
Yeah.
And then you took like a year off.
Yeah.
I've always been more of like an easy as she goes, daddy does it, but you know, don't take long breaks type of guy. I've been at it for I think 7 years now without any real like long term breaks. I had vertigo, and I did have to take a few months off following vertigo, but I feel like I've been able to avoid peaks and valleys precisely because I didn't push myself the way that you did. Do you feel like there was some burnout factor there? I would see you in the gym sometimes. You'd be like cutting weight for a competition, like kind of gaunt, kind of pale, kind of pissed. You know?
I probably needed a Snickers, yeah. Let's be honest.
You're like Joe Pesci in the Snickers commercial, you know, just kind of cranky. It was your second practice of the day. I felt like I could kind of see you falling out of love with it, you know, right before you took that break.
I was pushing myself pretty hard. I definitely think there's a point of overtraining. Like, I'm a perfectionist in what I love to do, and there is a point of overtraining things. Like, you just, if you did it as much as I was doing, your body, although I was young, and I'm still young, but...
It's only been a year.
I know! Still young. Well, sometimes you feel old. In the knees. It's just overtraining, and there was a point of like where it gets frustrating. You feel like you're not really moving. You are always progressing. It's just a mind state, and my mind sometimes is just going against me that like I'm just not there yet. I'm always reaching for something further. And I think it's both a blessing and a curse. A blessing because it means that I'm always going to continue to progress and continue to strive for more. Mm-hmm. I want more. I got my black belt in one, I'm ready to continue on and get my black belt in this, and then I'll probably continue doing this because the sport, even if you're a black belt, you're still learning.
Yeah, that's supposedly that's when it sort of starts again, right?
Like yeah.
Just the saying as someone that kind of knows her, I feel like Joy's hallmark is her ability to keep it together under all circumstances, you know, above all your social graces. Like, I've seen you just sort of be like unyieldingly patient with people that did not deserve that.
Yes.
And you know, I appreciate that about you. Because if everybody was you know, so mercurial, then you know we wouldn't be able to get along. So it's wonderful having you around. But you also reflect that on the mat, do you? I don't think I've ever seen you like slam the mat in frustration or like walk away from a loss and pout. I've never seen that.
Let me correct you on that one. So,
oh, we had an incident.
I do keep it together in front of people because I don't want to be a sore loser. And, you know, win or lose, I always shake my opponent's hand and give them a hug and tell them good job, blah, blah. And then I get in the car. Then I get in the car, and that's a whole other story. Fuck that bitch! I hate her!
Oh, I'm gonna Mom, we're sorry. Mom, we're sorry.
I did it, yes. Oh, my mother! I'm gonna hear about this. Anyway. But no, it's not only like frustration at my opponent sometimes, but it's also like, and this is just basically a competition, but it's like, it just breaks my heart to lose. Like, not at the gym. Oh, don't laugh at me.
Oh, even at the gym.
No, it breaks my heart. It breaks my heart, you know.
But like, in competition, like, it's devastating. And my last really hard loss was at the San Jose Open in January, and I just felt like I could have and should have beat this girl. You know, and she was an awesome athlete, and I just could not get it together that day. And, you know, I cried all the way home. I mean, I couldn't even say goodbye to any, like, I shook her hand. I'm like, good job, good job. And I kind of, like, at my teammates as I'm walking by, I'm kind of like, you know.
Goodbye.
Like, Dustin tried to come up to me and say something. I'm just like, nope, see you later. And I just walked, and I texted everybody, and I'm like, I'm sorry, I gotta go. And I just bawled my eyes out the entire way home. I mean, like, my face was, like, sore the next morning. I cried so hard. It just... Like, it's horrible. It's horrible to lose. And, like, I won't show it because I feel like that's kind of, you know, pathetic and being a sore loser. But I'm okay admitting that I am pathetic and a sore loser. It's just I do it all by myself. I just do it by myself.
You know, but I love I love wrestling. Dude, yeah. Just as much as jiu-jitsu.
Did you wrestle all 4 years in high school?
I did, but I didn't do – I just did freestyle and Greco-Roman. Okay. I never did the
folk style
team. Yeah. Okay. The folk style.
So you're doing exactly. like the off season tournaments and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like
I jump into tournaments. I did a couple tournaments too. It was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun. You know, so like all I knew, my only pin I really kind of knew was the mount. They call that Saturday Night Special. Need. It was awesome. I got a couple pins there.
When I was in high school, there was these two brothers, Ron and Nick Blair. If you're out there, you get a shout out. All right. They got so much better every year over the offseason because, you know, you couldn't throw a stone at a wrestling tournament and not hit one of these two guys. They would sign up for every weight class. They'd let them sign up. They weighed like 130. They'd be like 130, 135, 154, like everything, right? And then do the open division.
That's fun.
This old, you know, 40-year-old guy wanted to, like, showed up at the tournament and wanted to, like, wrestle somebody.
Right, right.
You know, I think I saw one of these two, but I was like, all right,
let's do it. A leopard singlet. Like, that's cool about those tournaments. You're allowed to can get away with them.
Yeah, yeah, and you got more points for like throwing them over their
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. You can get like toss them out the ring or something. Like you can throw them off of you or something like that.
Yeah,
you have like 5 points. Like man,
well, so
that'd be cool if jiu-jitsu, huh? Had like me and Glover thought about that. Like if you did some sick ass throw and then like land to a side control.
Yeah,
that's like all right. That's two and one for six. You get a point for sickness.
You know, can we talk about that a little bit? Like the jiu-jitsu rule set. Like it's kind of hard to, you know, just so you know that I'm not talking totally out of my butt or whatever. So I wrestled for 8 years, four in high school, four in college. It was club wrestling in college.
Right, right.
I've been doing jits for 7 years now under Dustin Akbari.
Nice.
He's awesome.
He's the man.
Dude. He's the man. He's the fucking man.
He's a stud.
He's a super stud. Yeah.
Don't bring your girlfriend around. He'll steal him. He'll steal your girlfriends.
Hey, that's
handsome ass man.
That's a real.
Damn you.
That's a real thing. Yeah.
No, that's real talk.
You gotta be careful with the Persian prince. Though. Fucking strangle me. I mean, they would just
trying to go for a single leg when you can go for a nice, beautiful butterfly. So you're like,
yeah. And you know, Andre, man, he was actually really cool to me. Like when I look back on it, because he would kind of look at me trying to like single leg like a 50-year-old purple belt or something, right? And he would just kind of look at me, just kind of roll his eyes and be like, you know, you'll learn.
Man, that would be fun to watch, like, my old white belt, blue belt matches. It's just hilarious, like, how uncoordinated, you know? It's funny.
Yeah.
From looking at my matches now to, you know, how I was in the beginning. Yeah. Like, because you think you're the same. You think you're the same. Not. You're not. You're like, oh, man, I was a good blue belt doing, like, or, you know, yeah. a white belt, like, decent, like, decent green belt, and I was, like, coordinated.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. But I mean, at the time for that level, I guess, you know, I was okay.
Good for blue belt.
Good for blue belt.
You know, so when I started doing jiu-jitsu and I realized I wasn't going to be able to, like, wrestle my way through this, I almost felt like I'd been lied to the whole time that I was doing wrestling.
Right.
Because, you know, like, you know, you get in those wrestling rooms and they're like, you're the toughest motherfucker.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, this is, wrestling is it. You want to learn to defend yourself, wrestling's the number one thing.
Yeah.
You know, wrestling's kind of. It's interesting because it's a sport that teaches humility above all, you know?
Right.
Like, NCAA champion just won the finals match. They don't even really like it if you celebrate. It's kind of not, you know?
Yeah.
But they tell you, you know, you're wrestling. Wrestling's it. And then, so I kind of believed the hype.
Right,
and then
right.
And then I got into jiu-jitsu. And, like, for the first year, I was like, man, I've been lied to.
Yeah.
You know? And it wasn't until I kind of, you know, I just hit like a wall, and I was like, all right, I'm starting every round on my back, and I've got to open my guard up.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
And that wasn't pretty, man. Just, like, getting on my back, I felt claustrophobic, especially in the gi.
Right,
like,
right.
I could feel, like, my sinuses and, like, my tongue fall to the back of my throat.
Right,
I couldn't really breathe, you know? But there's that, like, that period of humbling that kind of everyone has to go through. You know, broadly, people are kind of, like, forgetting how to talk to each other.
Yeah.
You know? And not to, like... not to get political, I don't want to make this thing a political space or whatever.
Talking to each other,
yeah, just
instead of on the
other.
Phone, instead of texting and shit.
Yeah,
you know?
Just talking.
This is great. Like, yeah. I like this. Like, it,
you know,
it's therapeutic.
Yeah, yeah, know? Fuck yeah, dude.
Feels like I'm. Sorry for interrupting, but you know,
no,
it feels feels natural.
Yeah,
you know, I like. You know, I'm getting a little nervous. I like how I am right now. Just a little nervous. Like, you're new. I like this feeling I'm getting. You know, this is. Cool. Like, you know, I haven't done too many. You know, podcasts. I know. Like, I'm gonna watch this later. Like, fuck! I shouldn't have said that.
Everybody in Croatia is like fit, and there's no like stray dogs or homeless people and shit. It's like, and it's crazy because like you think of like the war that was over there in the Baltics and all that stuff. Like, I don't think maybe it was destroyed, but. I guess the story is the city. We got a good little tour from, actually, Dom.
From Dom?
Yeah.
I was about
Dom.
To say, like, a...
Yeah, so
like,
we got... Not only that, we got a really good friend.
Yeah.
And his fiance is living in Zagreb, and we just go meet him at his like, apartment in this really old building, and he takes us on, like, the most incredible... It was, like, a five-mile tour on fight day. Maybe I would have skipped that. My leg hurt after that fight.
Wait, really? He took you...
Yeah, he took us on, like, a pretty
wandering
solid...
around before the championship fight?
Well, it was, like, our one chance. That was our day, you know, that we had time. And, you know, it's, like, you don't want to just sit in a hotel and be, like, oh, shit, I'm fighting later. You got to do something.
Yeah, you're incredible.
But I didn't...
Why fight abroad?
I didn't intend for the tour to go on so long, but, I mean, he just took us to the church there. Anyway, I could go on and on about how sick it is. At night, they just had, like, an ice skating ring. They went, like, a mile... And all
really?
Around it is just live music, people just singing, dancing, and having fun, and just, like, getting wasted.
Oh, my God.
For, like, it goes on for, like, 3 weeks or something.
So he gave you the locals only tour.
Yeah, and then at night it was just, like, these little boxes made out of plywood, basically, but they're all super nice, and they're just selling whatever they got, you know? They eat a lot of meat and cheese.
That's really cool, you know? I wish there was more, I feel like you know you're in another country when you start seeing street vendors, you know?
Yeah, that it was... And you know what's cool about Croatia is it's not as expensive as the rest of Europe. It's not
really?
As pretentious. It was, like, cheaper than the States, to be honest.
Sure.
And they took care of us. Everything was, like, three-course meal, blah, blah, blah. The nicest hotel in the whole city. And
people are friendly, too.
Oh, man.
It's so funny.
Amazing people. Really nice.
It's so funny.
Some really beautiful girls there. And just
is everyone just, like, fit and beautiful over there?
Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible.
So funny you were talking about there's no stray dogs over there. Haley and I went to Bali last year. It's like the
oh,
land.
God.
It's like the land of stray dogs.
That in Mexico.
That in Mexico.
Really mangy strays. Yeah, it's like clean and like nice. Like it's like it's such a different culture. Like as an MMA fighter, like you come over here and you fight in some regional promotion. Like
it's in the hood.
People
it's
get drunk after and they're like, oh, I want to fight you. I'm going to train for a year and fight you. Like someone said that to me after I won the Tachi Palace belt. Like
you're kidding.
Yeah, I was like 10-0. I beat Tim McKenzie with the same move that I won in Croatia with, Mata Guillotine. And some, you know, like, and my buddy Cello was like right behind me about to just
bounce this dude out, you know? And I'm like, no, no, he's ready to just knock the guy out. But over there, it's like people you like revered, you know, like. The people like really respect MMA. They do like in the ring, so it's old school like pride.
Okay.
And then they do half kickboxing and then half MMA, and it's just like it's kind of more like a Japanese audience where they really like respect the martial art.
They're quiet.
Like, you're on the ground doing work, and they're not like, oh boo. They're like, whoa, that's amazing. You know, like really respect it. The culture over there, it's really different. They're really cool. I feel like my genetics are from there, so I felt like I was just going home. There's like Colosseums and stuff, like the like in Rome. Yeah, the Colosseums over there on the coast.
And yeah, you're a gladiator. Yeah,
yeah, I'm so a gladiator. Yeah, I think in a past life, I'm a gladiator. Yeah,
in the current life, you're a gladiator.
That's true. That's true. That's true as well.
Right,
but I don't think it's my first time around. Anyway,
when I go to Mexico, I definitely know my genetics are from there because I feel like I'm home.
Those shrimp tacos are good.
I see the shrimp tacos. I see the dogs with the udders, and I know I'm home. It's so sad, man. It's so sad. Like honestly, that's a you know, when you think about like the hierarchy of like the hierarchy of social wants, you know, taking care of animals can seem pretty low when there's so many people like, you know, wanting.
Yeah, there's a lot of places in the world where
you gotta take care of the fucking dogs, man. Like it's so depressing. It's so depressing to see like dogs and cats like
that's why I was not depressed when I was in Croatia. Yeah. There was no fat people, there was no homeless people, and there was no stray dogs.
Yeah. It's like, oh, like they know they're violated and they know they're going back. You know, does that ever happen or no?
They not us per se, but people have ran.
Yeah,
you
people
know.
Ran. They'd let, you know, the marshals would get them, U.S. marshals.
I mean, you know, yeah, I must say a couple times, you know, I've gotten, you know, people, you know,
really?
You know, I've gotten pissed and just set the record straight. It never escalated, you know, once I set the tone that I'm not some square that's going to back off, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I could be intense, I think, you know.
I bet you're Russian.
Yugoslavian.
See? Yeah. Right there, you just did it.
Yeah.
Well, those Eastern Bloc people always get real particular for you.
But, yeah, you know, it just, man.
I got in a situation. Remember I showed that video?
I wish I were more poised, if you will.
No, because no. Because when I feel you keep like. That fire.
You know, when I feel disrespected,
that's what these guys do, right? Many of them.
Yeah, you know, but there's a certain point.
Collegiality to it.
Yeah, you know, and if when you cross that point, it's like I'm gonna set it straight, and I'm not intimidated by your tats or your, you know, wannabe record or, you know.
Is that something these folks sort of like make size. A career out of intimidating people, right? Well, and like they kind of.
Yeah.
They kind of come up to someone who's not intimidated to them. Is that sort
and,
of like.
And they cower.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking at them and they're all bowed up here, but they've got freaking twigs for legs. It's like, oh my God, dude. I can't
respect
your legs,
someone
you know?
that skips
and you're
leg day.
Done. You're, you know, I just sweep that and it's over, you know, but yeah, they're so used to intimidating others.
Right.
You know, so my theory is I terrorize those that terrorize others.
Oh, you're like the Dark Knight.
You know, I grown up as a kid, I didn't put up with bullies. Yeah. I was bullied, you know, and then once I grew into my own, it's like, and I didn't tolerate that. So I stood against that and still to this day, you know, it just irks me, you know? So my theory, you know, what I try to teach my boy and, you know, my 9-year-old is you don't talk shit about people's religion. You know, you don't disrespect religion and you stand up against bullies. Yeah. And that doesn't mean just if you're being bullied. I'm talking third party. If you're seeing someone else get bullied, you speak up.
Don't tolerate
and
it,
yeah. You know, so, and that's what I try to instill in my boy. And that's kind of how I'm built, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's, I'm pretty simple that way.
That same principle is like a lot of what's fucking wrong with society right now too. It's like there's, you know, these are strange times we're living through. And I think that one of the issues going on is like, we've kind of lost that principle of like, you see someone getting bullied, you see someone getting like, jumped in the middle of the street, fucking stand up and say something, right?
Yeah.
And at a broader level, we're seeing
I think our communities of color under incredible strain because of the current political climate that we're in. Mm-hmm. And like, we all forgot that part of us to say like, wait a second, we're seeing these fucking poor, like these entire communities start to get like getting bullied. And I'm not going to stand for it. Mm-hmm. You know, the people that we, I think a lot of the people on like the social justice warrior, like hyper left have come and like, you know, to the defense, if you will. But there's a lot of people, I feel like there's a lot of people in the middle who are just kind of staying silent about shit going on, you know? Yeah. You know, and I don't want to get too political, but you know, these are strange times, and there does come a moment where even if you're not called out yourself, you know, if you don't feel threatened yourself, but you're seeing entire communities of color, entire communities due to their sexual orientation or something get bullied, mm-hmm. you know, on a broader scale. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of your duty to stand up to it, right? Kind of like what you taught your little boy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a fine line in what we do. We can't politically move towards anything or take a strong position.
Yeah, that makes sense.
We got to stay neutral.
That makes sense.
So I don't bring politics into the work, and I don't talk politics at home. You know, we're not a very political family. Actually, I just registered this last time for the sole reason because Roseville's, they needed a bond measure passed to build a sixth high school
in
my neighborhood. And so I literally walked into the polling station or whatever, checked yes for the bond and walked out. And that was
the fact. People don't realize, like, dude, the U.S. is pretty good, man. Like, you always think, like, I mean, you know, we've talked about, like, problems before where I'm like, oh, like, other countries are good, too. We do think about. It's so weird because there are things that we think, like, we have so good, but I'm like, every other, like, there's so many countries that do have that, like, freedom of speech is, like, you know, like, fucking
pretty universal in a lot of places.
Yeah, but then they're, like, unique. I feel like America is really unique.
Well, so a lot of places don't. So
you can be that. You can find absolute Japan in America. Like, we can be in Japan.
In America.
Yeah, like, just in, like, in a bigger city. If you go to New York.
It's wild. It's wild. Yeah. It's totally. It's just a unique cultural experience.
In America, dude. Like, it's just.
Do you feel like that? Do you feel like that's the defining feature of America?
Yeah, because there's so many different, like, there's no way you can eat a fucking Thai food in Iran, dude. Listen to me, like.
Really?
Yeah, like, there's no, like, dude, who the fuck thinks about Thailand in Iran? There's no Thai people there. Like, I've never seen a Thai people. Dude, I've never seen Asian people before I came to the U.S.
Wait, really?
Yeah, we don't have, like, I mean.
So you came when you're 15, 14.
14, 15. 14. Like, one of them. Yeah, I mean, dude.
What was that like when you first came here? You and I have never actually really talked about this too much. Like, when you first got here?
Well, I kind of knew what it is. Like, it's not like, dude, like, I lived in a city. Like, it's not like I was living in
a cave or something.
Yeah, like, living in a fucking tent, like, built of cards. Like, no, it was like, some things are, like, same cultural. Like, and you also know, like, and you're like, I think, like, one thing that government does really good in Iran, well, they don't do really good. Like, they try really hard. They want to, like, they want to restrict information. Like, so, like, a lot of, like, same thing in China. Like, internet is, like,
it's its own, like, internet. You're, like, in, yeah, like, your, yeah, own, like,
oh, here, you can.
It's really a big, yeah, intranet.
Like, if you want to go on, like, I remember, like, the first year I went back, 2011. So I was here for a year. I went back the summer. I was, like, trying to Google, like, something. It's just, like, that site is restricted. It's, like,
so. It was porn, wasn't it?
No, dude, it was YouTube. But it porn, too. Like, dude, like, what if somebody just, you don't let them look like.
You can't get porn in Iran?
No, like, you have to, like, it's like on cell phones, you know? Like, they fucking get you on your phone to
wait, really? You.
Like, can people have any fun? You don't let them drink. You, like, it's really hard to talk to girls because, like, you have to take them to, like, dark alleys and shit. Cause, like,
wait, you gotta take them to a dark alley?
Well, I mean, you know, that's, like, I mean, that's a bit of
exaggeration.
Yeah. But, like.
But you can't, like, be on a date in public?
No, dude. Like, I mean, you can, but, like, when you see, like, you just can't, like, be, like, hella into it, like, in public. The cops will go always, like, they're like, so, like, if you make us, like, if you be, like, hella, like,
affectionate.
Okay, let's say, like, two attractive young men and girl are walking, mm-hmm. like, and you're like, oh, these fools are definitely dating, and that's okay, but, like, if you guys start, like, kissing, oh, dude, cops will pull up right away. It's like, are you guys related? Like, are you guys married? No, you guys aren't married? Like,
fuck. Wait, really?
Yeah, dude, they'll do that shit. Like, so it's like.
You're not married? Stop holding hands?
Yeah, like, what, fucking arrest you or something? Like, your parents know you're here? Like, get the fuck
what out. Power do they have to arrest you? Like, what's the law?
The law is that, you know, don't fuck with the government. The law. Dude, it was so funny. This guy cited, like, yes, according to the Constitution, like, Part A, you know how they have, like, Constitution, like, A.32.
Yeah, the citation.
Yeah, it's like,
according to this, yeah, you can't hold hands.
No, this fool, like, it was so funny. One of his officials, he cited something. It was like, yes, according to this law, you know, not a name, just like a bunch of numbers.
Yeah, yeah, letters. The citation, yeah. Like section, like penal code, yeah. Section 163A. Yeah.
So he gives this, and like, I don't even forget what he was, dude, but he was just so funny. He gives this thing, and he's like, dude, there is no such, like, that law doesn't even exist.
He just made up a bunch,
like,
of numbers.
I think, yeah, the number ended at like 33, and like, we only had like 32, you know, like that was it. Like P32 was the last law, and it was like P33. Like, he was just like,
he's just writing them in his fucking head.
Yeah, he was just like, he just makes it up because, like, dude, what the thing I was most shocked about, it was just how people can just criticize the government, dude. Like,
here in the U.S.
Yeah,
like, dude, that's our past. That's our. That's like,
yeah. See, I was talking,
people, like, spend as much time criticizing the government here as they do on, like, baseball.
Yeah, like, come on, dude. Like, you can't talk shit. Like, I remember when the big news that in Iran was, like, in the U.S. was, I don't know if you remember, the cop pepper sprayed, like, a bunch of students that were sitting
down. Here in Davis. Yeah. That was here.
Yeah, so, like, that was, like, fucking, for, like a month, there was, like,
wait, how did you feel about that? Because I feel like in Iran, that's, like, they got it. Like, if that happened in Iran, it'd be, like, the kids, they got off easy.
Yeah, and, like, I mean, we'll feel the same thing, like, ah, fuck the cops, you know, they'll do that shit. But, like, it was so crazy how they talk about this thing, and they're, like, I don't know what happened to the guy, but at least he got, like, criticized. Dude, in Iran, that shit is normal.
In
dude.
Iran, it's like Monday.
I know. I was like, dude, like, you don't even, like, you don't have, like, the cops.
You have no right.
Business you talking no. to the cop, dude. Like, yeah. He just tells you do it. Like, there is no, with a cop, there is no conversation, dude.
Yeah.
Like, it's only, and there are sections of cops, dude. There's, like, a regular cop. There's, like,
they're, like, different bosses.
No, there's, like, the political cop. Like, they call it the political belief cop. Dude, you don't fuck with those guys, dude. I swear, that's the name of the cop. Like, that's a rough translation. Like, the political and belief cop. Like, there's a cop for that. There's a police for that. Dude, it's funny, but it's like, that's how people live over there, man.
Like, he seems cool as hell. Yeah. But it doesn't seem like Joey Diaz funny. Just no. Like this, talking. Yeah.
Joe Rogan seems really serious.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
He's like, I'm getting up at 6 a.m. I'm doing yoga at 12.
I work out hard every morning. Like, what?
Yeah.
I wake up, drink coffee, work out hard. Yeah. Like, damn.
Gotta save off old age. Gotta save off old age. I'm on my ketogenic diet. You know, putting on my Vibram shoes. Gotta go for these runs. What am I gonna do if I don't go for a run? You know, it's like, he seems really like, yeah, I don't know. He doesn't seem like someone I would think is naturally funny. Yeah. He seems like a fucking, like, army drill sergeant almost. Yeah. Like, he's, like, so disciplined, you know?
Yeah.
This guy, Graham Greene, is a author. I just read this book by him called The Comedians. And it's about these guys who are in, like, old school Haiti under a dictatorial government.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's really just about life, right? The book is. Anyways, he has this line in it where the author's thinking, you know, the narrator's thinking to himself. He has this line in it and he says, "We admire in others the traits that we do not have for ourselves." Like, you know, like when you admire something, it's typically something that you don't have yourself, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, that's kind of like what I admire about Joe, is like that discipline that he has, you know? Yeah. It's like, as you get older and, like, your parents aren't around, or there's, you know, you don't necessarily have to, you don't have to make your bed.
Yeah.
You don't have to, you know, whatever, like, get up at 6 a.m. and go for the run. Yeah. You know, you'll feel better if you do.
Yeah.
But you kind of have to, like living with discipline is hard, man.
Yeah, it is.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like I feel like one of the things that I've gotten away from in my martial arts is just that discipline in my daily life. Where I'm eating candy. I'm kind of having wine with dinner.
Yeah.
You know, maybe let my car get dirty. You know, little shit like that. But that starts adding up, you know. And you're like, oh, maybe I'll show up to class 15 minutes late and skip the warm-up.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I want to talk about jiu-jitsu. I want to talk about warm-ups with you for a second. Do you feel like there's a point where you're just like, no?
I hate warm-ups.
Yeah, okay.
I hate warm-ups. Yeah, I don't, yeah.
You know?
It just seems like the thing to do just to waste time. I would rather, like, show a move and have everyone drill the move.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
For a couple hours. But then you get people that want to just sit down and talk. And
I feel like there's,
I think what made me really start thinking about it too is I'm hearing about other academies opening up in Sacramento. I'm like, oh, shit. You're like,
fuck, he opened up an academy? He sucks. What? Yeah. Maybe I'll drop in and teach. Show them who they're learning from.
So I don't want to wait. Like, I don't want it to get saturated in SAC. And like, okay, I'm finally ready.
You kind of got to jump on it, right?
Yeah, yeah. And right now there's a lot of room. That's another thing.
There still is room.
I don't want to be next to a trading partner. I don't want anyone getting mad.
Step on each other's toes or whatever.
And then I don't want it to be too saturated. If you're not on my team, I'll open up right next door to you. If you're on my team,
Yeah. No, it's, you know, it's a really delicate thing, right?
Yeah.
It's weird because your biggest network is going to be where you grew up and have been all your life.
Yeah.
But that's also your current school's territory.
Yep.
Right? So it's almost like you have to like ride off into the sunset like a cowboy and like go like start anew somewhere, you know?
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. Folsom or somewhere far, like where,
no one can get mad at you.
Yeah. Yep. Starting all over.
That's rough.
Yeah. It'll be fun though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always thought what would be fun. See, I think this would be fun. I worry that maybe people would get offended, you know, but like, you know, in wrestling, they have dual meets.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that like between schools.
I wonder.
But, you know, it wouldn't be good if like,
no,
it wouldn't be good if one school just like munched up the others. Yeah. You know, if it was competitive.
Yeah.
Good. You know what I mean? But it wouldn't be good if it was just like domination.
Yeah.
And I feel like the way the jiu-jitsu landscape is like, you get a lot of people who are like really hardcore about it will cluster up in one area. Yeah. And then a lot of people who are just kind of like, you know, I'm an accountant and I do this for fun.
Yeah.
Kind of cluster up in another area.
Yeah.
And then like the, you know, before we know it, the accountants got themselves into a dual meet with the, you know, the kids who were skipping college.
Yeah. It'd be kind of weird because then you have that, the guys at work all day and then they train at night.
Yeah.
And then they might go against the guy that trains twice a day, three times a day. That might suck.
Yeah, I'm starting to run into some of those kids like at open mats. You know, like, what are you doing? Like, oh, I work for the state and I do this, you know, I'm 9 to 5 and, you know, I pack up my lunch and I try to be good. Yeah. What do you do? Oh, I just, you know, jiu-jitsu 3 times a day.
Yep. Yeah.
All day.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, so this is like not going to be competitive.
That's what I'm saying. You should do the masters. The master division.
Yeah, I think fuck it. They should do like a further sort of like, I need you to certify that you show up to a job for 40 hours a week. So I know that this is going to be fair. Please sign here. Let me verify. I got to verify your employer. It's like a credit check. I got to verify that you work.
Yeah, because it's going to be tough, especially if they grew up with jiu-jitsu then they're at that level. They're at that age now in the class, training twice a day. They're going to be monsters.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. So, we'll see how it is.
Yeah. Do you have any competitions coming up?
No, I don't have anything right now.
Just taking some time off?
Letting my knee heal.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll see.
So many, like, friends from, like, differing views, like, religiously, politically, whatever. But it's just like, man, jiu-jitsu is just so unifying, I feel like. It's so much stronger than that, you know. I don't know if it's just jiu-jitsu or martial arts in general, right? It's always led me to the positive in everybody.
Like, I mean, I think the martial arts where sparring is a regular part of it is what's going to bring people together like that.
Yes. The real martial arts. I don't know what you want to call the
other stuff.
Traditional. I guess they're always calling them traditional martial arts.
I have no idea.
That gets undone.
There's a big market for that, though. For that stuff. Yeah.
It's crazy because
Those Sistema guys?
Oh, what is that about?
It's like the Russian martial art, but they're kind of like.
It's new, too. How is this like? Don't they have the internet out there?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like, God.
And then, like, the, you know, the Ball of Chi.
Oh, yes.
Dudes are still doing their thing. They're going hard, man.
Hey.
I follow one on YouTube just because I, just because he does a really good job of like speaking to the camera and like he's like really like engaging, and so I'm kind of trying to like learn,
right? Yeah,
you know what I mean? Because I mean he can't be like what he's doing isn't all wrong. He's making a living off of this, you know what I mean? And he's
right,
like, he's a good instructor, like insofar as people are believing his shit, you know?
Right.
So I follow him on YouTube, and dude, he's doing like online code. His whole thing is like you can like sync your chi and then harness it and then like throw it at people. You know? Like a Hadouken.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, but he's going strong, man, dude. He's doing, I just saw a thing, he was in Prague.
Uh-huh.
You know, he had a bunch of dorks in Prague pay him like $125.
Dude,
like
you know, I picked the wrong sport then, man. Right? Screw all this school, yeah. Screw all this honor and friendship stuff. I want to sell balls of chi online.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the sort of thing where it's like you're, man. That, you know, I'm surprised more anthropologists don't study that as like a way to like peer into, closed communities,
cults.
Yeah, cults.
They're cults.
They're,
yeah,
cults, right? I, yeah, mean, like,
because it doesn't work.
Because it doesn't work. If I tell you I'm gonna throw a ball of chi at you, and you, yeah, and I need you to like,
yeah,
act this way, and then like other, there's like doctors and shit, yeah, going to these things, and they're, yeah, like, yeah, you got me, you know, like I'm frozen.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, that's a fucking cult.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And yeah, it's not long before, yeah, you know, it's not, that doesn't, I think, do anything to bring out the positive aspects of people, and it doesn't do anything, no, to bring people closer together.
No, it doesn't. Yeah.
Taekwondo is an interesting one, because a lot of times those folks don't spar that much, but
right,
you know, if you're just doing the forms and learning movements and stuff, like that's not so bad. Like you can learn about hard work and dedication and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard because, like, man, I've definitely run it. Like one of my MMA instructors was a Taekwondo guy, and then he transitioned to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and,
yeah,
and MMA and stuff. And man, he would just like, I mean, he'd light me up, like
bet,
kicks, yeah, just in. So it's like,
but he was probably sparring.
Oh yeah. Then, he sparred, like, I don't know. It was in some Taekwondo place in Georgia, I think. And shout out to Rusty, but he could kick me at such weird angles, because you get used to like where things are capable of hitting you from.
Yeah.
And then it's just weird when you meet a guy who just, he's hitting you at angles that you're totally not used to. And that totally, like, you know, it opened my eyes to one, like, you know, I should be more open-minded, you know, because, yeah, like, there's good things. There's, like, even in the traditional martial arts, there doesn't mean, even if they have a cult mentality, it doesn't mean that there's things that
within them that can't,
yeah,
be useful.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, like, God, like, look at Anthony Pettis. You can't argue with,
no, you can't
with that guy. Yeah. So it's just like, it's hard because I hate seeing, people that claim that they're martial artists. And maybe they teach one or two good things, you know, like, but then they spew all this other stuff.
Yeah,
like, it's,
yeah,
just,
and
like
the rest is bullshit.
Yeah, you know, and then there is this weird, like, cult, like worship. It's not even a cult. It's like worship the head dude, you know.
Yeah, like a
leader.
Living deity.
Yeah, almost. You know, yeah, like it was.
He's got his hands in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, he'll be interesting to, yeah, talk to.
Can you quickly explain to folks this program that you're doing, where you're in the Navy now?
Yeah, so I was in the Army.
You're in the Army, and then you switched. I'd like you to touch on that too. But
yeah,
basically the Department of Defense.
Yeah, Department
is paying, yeah, for your naval, yeah, for your naval education.
Yeah, Uncle Sam.
So right now you're in school for how much longer?
So medical school is 4 years, and okay, then I'm matched into a Navy residency, which will be another 4 years, probably.
Okay, so your like next 5 years are spoken for.
Pretty much, yeah. Well, and then after residency, I owe Uncle Sam 4 years of working as a physician in the Navy.
So that's not the 4 year residency thing?
No, residency.
That's another 4
on top
of that?
Yeah.
But so your next 9 years are spoken for.
Yeah, residency I'd have to do either way. Like, it just pays more for me to do it in the military.
Okay.
And it's really hard to do it once you're in a scholarship program outside. So I was in the Army. I did a branch transfer to the Navy for medical school because I got into medical school and I didn't want to pay for it because, like, the school I go to here is like 56 grand a year. It's like retarded expensive. So that's 4 years. They give me a stipend every month to live on, which is kind of nice. And then go to residency, which all physicians do. If you want to, that's like where you specialize in something. So whether you're family practice, you want to do surgery, everyone does residency in that field. Most of them are 3 or 4 years. Some like crazy surgery ones are longer, but you have to do that. And then after that, I owe the Navy for 4 years working as a residency trained physician, which I don't know. That's kind of like the payback part, because the pay isn't as good as the outside world, and you'd have to do residency either way. So I'll be like, fuck. I'll be like
39
by the time I get
free and clear.
Yeah, but I think it's worth it. I think there's a lot of value in it, because otherwise, you know, residents, a lot of people don't know this, but when you go to the hospital and there's a resident physician there, you think that you're getting paid bank, right? No, they're getting paid 40.
Well, everyone, like all people see it's like, oh, you're a doctor.
Yeah, no, residents, it's like, it's kind of a scam, honestly, because they're getting paid 45 to 50 grand a year for those 4 years after medical school. So they have, you know, 250 grand in debt that they can't pay down because they're only making, you
know, wait, so the interest is accumulating.
Yeah, so by the time they get a residency, they're like 300, 400, 500,000 in debt, and then they just start making like doctor money, you know. So it's this big pipeline. It takes a long time. So I didn't want anything to do with that. So
they're alive and they're conscious, but what they're experiencing is no one knows what we're experiencing.
What do you think about when you roll?
When I roll is one of the only times that my mind just kind of shuts off.
Yeah, that's why I love it.
That's why I love it too.
Because you can be stressed out, you have shit going on in your personal life. Like, I'm crazy stressed with school and studying, and you like being in the hospital, and you go in there, and when someone's trying to choke you, like everything kind of tunes out, and you're like, all right, I'm focusing on this right now. And even, you don't even think about, I think, in the beginning, you think about specific techniques and like strategy, but as you progress, like the higher levels of jiu-jitsu, you're just autopilot, like it's all ingrained.
Yeah.
When you
roll, do you feel like there's certain moves that you're looking for, or is it just kind of like what opens up for you?
Well, I have my game.
So I feel like you've definitely hit me with like the same couple of moves.
Yeah. They're moves that I like, and that they kind of fit in with the rest of my game and just kind of conforms to my body type and the style I like to play. But a lot of things, like, I like improv. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I've definitely learned things, and they, like, resurface sometimes. Like, you haven't drilled it in a while or done it, and then you just kind of pull it out of your ass. And it, like, looks really cool when you do it. But I don't know. I think that a lot of it's just in the moment, whatever you feel. It's like surfing. I think that... Like, that's why there's a lot of crossover between jiu-jitsu and surfing. It's in the moment, you know? Like, the wave is going to act however it acts, and you just have to kind of conform to it and put your little personal twist on it.
Yeah.
But it's more like being in the moment. I think that's it. Being in the moment, like, shutting everything else off.
Yeah, yeah. Does your mind shuts off like that, too? Yeah. So I think that's actually probably one of the biggest differences that I see in between advanced practitioners and sort of folks maybe 3 years and before, is the people that are like 3 years and younger, I see them like, I feel like you can actually see them thinking.
Yeah.
Or like attempting to think.
Yeah, well, I think that there's a difference in cognition, like, or at the end of the arm bar as, okay, I put my foot on their hip, I pivot, I pull their forearm, break their posture, I have to put my leg over. And then when it comes to, like, you've been doing it for a while, you just do that automatically. You don't have to think about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, I have to...
You're thinking, like, I already know how to do this, like, in my sleep. What's he going to do? How's he going to defend? That kind of thing.
Right.
What is up? You have not died and gone to heaven. It's another episode of Life in Jiu-Jitsu here with Mikey Hothi, one of my lifelong training partners, if you can consider life from Purple Belt on. So you actually... like train in one of like the great shark tanks of MMA and jiu-jitsu over at the Nick Diaz Academy. You, like, how often are you able to, like, I don't know, get a roll in with like Crone or Nick or Nate? Like, is that a thing?
Yeah. I mean, Crone's his main gym's down in LA.
Okay.
And so I've had the opportunity. So he's been getting ready for fights, and I've had the opportunity to train with him for weeks at a time. And it's a really humbling experience.
Is he that good?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah. So it's been a long time since I've felt like a white belt, but there have been times when I've rolled with Crone where I've just been getting tossed around, and sometimes I'll have my good days, but he's got a killer guillotine and he's got a lot of wisdom to impart. And so I've even started to do some of his like breathing techniques and to try to like work his game into my own, because it's so different from like what I, cause at our gym, you got a lot of like long, lankier guys, you know?
Got it.
Yeah. But I've had the opportunity to train with Nick and Nate regularly. Nate especially, he's at the gym. I think Nick's he splits his time now between Stockton and Vegas.
Yeah, but, I see him in Vegas a lot.
Yeah, you have follow him on Snapchat.
Yeah, he's killing it.
I think he gets paid to do a lot of these appearances.
This club appearances.
Yeah, yeah. And so he still looks like he's in shape. He'll always have like shirtless pictures and stuff.
Yeah,
yeah. But Nate's in there regularly. I think he's there. You know, there are rumors that there's a third fight coming up with McGregor. But
he's about to get paid, son.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's in. I hope so. You know, he deserves it. And he's, you know, he's always like supported people at our gym, and he's like one of those guys that has put in the time, and he's good enough that I think he
wins that fight.
Oh yeah, I thought he even won the second one.
Yeah, yeah. The second one was tough.
I've watched it a few times, and I don't know. It's hard to see anything. I mean, 47-47, I can agree with.
Yeah.
But
it's tough because Nate sits to guard. Yeah. He sat to guard a couple times, or he like, you know, like when Fedor rocked Fabricio Verdum, and Verdum was like, oh, I'm so rocked, come get me. And he actually triangled him.
Oh, yeah. And he does like, that, man.
Yeah.
He did that in the Gallard fight against Melvin. Boom, within the first few seconds. Boom. Gallard dropped him, but he dropped him, right? Yeah. And then he got caught in the guillotine.
Yeah.
That's
tough to score.
Yeah.
That's just tough to score is all.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he definitely got, like, you know, McGregor obviously like looked like he punched hard, but
yeah.
Yeah, Nate, I think, had that both fights.
The thing with Nate and McGregor, I feel like, is a case of, like, Nate is better than McGregor at what McGregor is good at. Mm-hmm. So McGregor is like, you know, when he was fighting at 145, he was the rangy guy. He was the lanky guy for 145, right? He was the lanky southpaw. And he, you know, the other thing is he had a lot of attack output volume. He would kind of be in your face. And so, you know, jumping up to, you know, 155 and facing Nate, well, all of a sudden, you know, Nate's a southpaw too, and he's the guy that's in your face. And so kind of like McGregor is like, I think, badly suited to have that, his own game, you know.
Yeah. And also, I think Nate's one of those guys you just can't break mentally.
No.
Where it's like, it's already so hard in the gym that this guy who's like talking trash to you and doing whatever else, that's not even a big deal. That's the norm, you know. Like you got
Nick in his ear.
And so, yeah, I've got countless stories of like, training with these guys.
What's being around those guys like?
So I've had the opportunity to go to a bunch of fights with them, with Nate especially. I went with Nate to the DC fight against, or he fought in Fairfax, Virginia against Gray Maynard. And I was like 18 or 19 years old. So it was pretty cool to like hang out with these like really big UFC fighters. Like Gilbert Melendez was with us on that trip. And I don't know, it's just a funny experience, man. I remember one time, you know, we had a little bit of downtime. So like, okay, like what do we do? We're in DC, you know, Mikey, you're into politics. Like what's there to do around here? I was like, okay, well let's go to a museum. And so like, you know, that's what I would do if I had free time. It's like, okay, well, yeah, let's go. And so I ended up taking him to somewhere I'd been wanting to go for a long time, the DC Holocaust Museum.
Oh, shit.
And of course, you know, it's a very serious experience. Yeah, very
somber tone.
And so we go to and Nate's already cutting weight. He's cutting down to 155 for his fight and feeling miserable. And they knew what the Holocaust was, but I don't think they, like, you know, you don't know what the museum's like. Have you ever been to the Holocaust Museum?
No.
Well, it's really somber, right?
I'll bet.
Yeah. And so we're like walking around the Holocaust Museum, and I just, at one point I looked over at Nate and he's just sitting there like on a bench, like, you know, like looking really down. And now since that experience, the thing at our gym has been like, okay, if you've got free time, don't ask Mikey what to do.
You're taking like the most depressed. Nate's looking at those guys. He's like, fuck, they look hungry too.
Dude, Yeah, it was an interesting experience.